T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Cody Decker.
He describes himself on Twitter as an anti-hero baseball player for the Royals organization. Sometimes an actor, rarely wrong, often a jerk, always adorable.
Host of Odyssey Sports' Big Time Baseball podcast.
The jawline, can't really beat it. I mean, from here up, not really good. You know, kind of like a soft 4. From but here down, hard 8. So 6.
Cody Decker on 670 The Score.
Let's talk some baseball with Cody Decker, as is our wont on Fridays. Cody Decker is on Twitter, at Decker6, the host of Down the Line with Cody Decker. Bet for the cycle. Bet MGM MLB. He joins us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sportsbook. And as always, you can see him today pumping the homeland on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score. Good morning, Cody. How are you?
Dan, I'm great. I'm hearing your lovely voice. By the way, happy 27th anniversary. My God, you're a broadcasting juggernaut.
Oh, God, it's a long-ass time. That is just, that is a really damn long day. And so, of course, yesterday, truth be told, I forgot about it. I just looked and I saw, because I was bitching about the White Sox. I'm like, it's May 19th, and they're like, oh, it's May 19th. So it goes back to 1995. And then Rick puts on Twitter, let's remind, use any GIFs and memes, however you want, to remind me how old I am. And people were having a lot of fun at my expense. And
you're
welcome. Thank you, Rick. And I have to, it was pretty funny, I have to admit. I want to talk about being on the bench, the process by which, if you're not in a game, how do you understand when you might pinch run, when you might pinch hit, when you're supposed to know, and how that should be communicated to you?
Well, that's actually a phenomenal question, a question that I had when I was in the big leagues in San Diego, because no one told me this at the time. Nowadays, it's a very different thing. A good ran organization, everyone knows what their role is going to be. Everyone knows that their role is going to be day of. If you're going to be a pinch hitter, you know what your role is that day. You know who you're planning to pinch hit against. You know the situations that you're supposed to pinch hit in. Same with pinch running. It's just a matter of who you are. It's a matter of the situation that is put in front of you and what your manager communicates with you. A good manager makes sure every guy on his bench knows exactly scenarios that he could be coming into the game. I played for teams where it was the exact opposite. San Diego Padres, 2015. No one knew what was happening.
There's also the idea of knowing you have a day off too, right? Should you find out the night before if they say, "Hey, look, don't put your spikes on." Like, that's usually the idiom that's used, is you don't even need your cleats, your spikes, because you're off, and you should be expected to know that the day before.
Yes, normally good organizations have the next day's lineup already posted. That's just something that you have ready to go, and you come to the field prepared, ready to know what's coming on for your day. However, again, this is not every single organization. Those are just the good organizations, the ones that keeps their players ready to go and understanding what their role is. A lot of organizations don't. A lot of people just have literally no idea how to run the ship. And I know that sounds ridiculous because it's not that hard. It's more or less just simple logistics with 25 people, yet Major League Baseball teams still can't figure it out.
So the Chicago White Sox schedule at the moment is setting up. They're headed to New York for 3 games at the Yankees. The last series was no fun. It was clear the Yankees were just better at baseball than they were right now. What's at stake this weekend?
I wouldn't say anything's at stake. I mean, the goal, I think a good goal would be at least to finish this series 500 if you can get split the series. But unfortunately, the Yankees are just an absurd juggernaut right now that don't seem to want to stop. The team won't stop hitting. They're pitching, and that's the thing. No one was expecting their pitching to be this. Gerrit Cole has been lights out for his last five starts, yet he's been the third best pitcher in that staff, and he still has arguably the best odds to win Cy Young Award in the AL. It's just a team that's playing out of their minds right now, and I don't actually believe the Yankees are this good. Keep in mind, we talked about injuries, and we've seen all the injuries on the South side. The Yankees get hurt easily. I mean, Aaron Judge is unbelievable, but that guy is made out of graham crackers. I am not waiting for him to play this entire season.
We have been watching basically a home run derby going on with Judge and Stanton and some of these distances, and I was laughing because, first of all, there was the issue with Yankee Stadium and how that has become more of a home run hitter's park than was originally thought when it was built, the right field porch being what it is. And then they moved the fence back at Camden Yards, significantly so, where Judge hit two, missed a third, and it hit at 400-some feet, was complaining about it. Then yesterday, Stanton hits one that clears the wall by 30 feet, and people were joking, like, if you're Stanton, you got to go over to Judge and say something, right? I mean, you got to say, I don't know, that fence looks fine to me, dude.
Absolutely. You know, he walked in, he's like, I don't know what you're complaining about. That seemed perfectly fine. Listen, it's 400 feet to left field in that stadium. One, it looks atrocious. Two, I don't know why they did it. Three, it's stupid. Four, yes, Aaron Judge's 400-foot ball to left field should have been a home run 30 rows deep. And five, Giancarlo Stanton just happens to have more power than Aaron Judge. You just got to deal with it, Aaron Judge. Stanton is just that much stronger.
Yeah, your idea of the Yankees sort of overperforming right now might be true, but I at the moment it doesn't affect the White Sox. I guess I would like to know they were relatively uncompetitive the last time around, and I'm not saying you have to take 2 or 3. I don't like to be that guy in the middle of May and talking about the importance of a series, but this, I can't shake the headwinds that Tony La Russa is causing this team, that has caused this team, and have so many things so obvious to all but the last of the dead end La Russa stands, who are all this cut from the same cloth, all the same mediocre white men that feel he represents something that might be taken away from them. And the Aaron Boone may not be the greatest tactical manager in the world, but everything that's done in those games, when you watch the Yankees, it makes sense. And so much of what the White Sox do does not make sense. And that becomes striking when they play each other.
That is true. But there's actually something else that I'm noticing this season that's more concerning to me as a fan. Last year, wasn't this White Sox team the most exciting and fun team to watch in baseball by far? And it wasn't even close. They don't seem like that same fun group of guys at the moment, and they're the same group. In fact, they're a better team right now than they ever have been, and they're not playing to their capabilities, but it doesn't seem like they're having a blast doing it. Last year, it looked like at this point of the year, they were having more fun than any two teams combined. Right now, it looks like the Yankees are just having the time of their lives.
Well, let's talk about that, because that's chicken and the egg, I always think. You never hear about a bad team having fun. You never hear about they may be bad, but boy, they have great chemistry and they're fun to watch. I doesn't that follow winning? Isn't that when those questions get asked and when you see certain behavior? I don't know. Maybe it's funny. Maybe the Cubs are that team. The Cubs seem in some of these games to be having a whole hell of a lot of fun, even though they're not all that good.
Even last year, the Cubs were like that at the end of the year. They had Wisdom and Schwindel both playing really well, and everyone's like, hey, this is at least a fun story of what these two are getting accomplished. And that was fun. Hell, the Cubs game the other night, the player who hit a home run in his first game, that was a blast. The Cubs on the north side are way more fun than the White Sox, and the teams are completely and drastically different.
Yeah, I wonder what – you can't force that, though, right? You can't have a team meeting and say, be more fun. I mean, I think it's going to come with getting on base, scoring runs, picking the ball up, activity on the base paths. I don't think you can synthesize fun, I guess.
No, it's on the, unfortunately, it's on the players. The players need to make sure that they're taking care of each other, taking care of the scenario, taking care of that clubhouse. Hell, Tim Anderson alone, I think, can take care of this. That guy is just a blast to watch. He's the most exciting player in baseball right now. And how can you not have a blast watching him play? However, if the team's just not putting it together, it's not fun. And we want to have some fun watching this team absolutely dominate this division like they can. Currently sitting at 500.
Well, then let's talk about what is significant regarding the leadership of this team. We know how important Jose Abreu is and has been and what he has done. He's 35 years old, as far as we know, and he isn't as good as he used to be. I think we presume that he's going to snap back a little bit. But what is the right way to manage his innings? His at-bats, he wants to play every day. He wants to be a horse. But at some point, if you're better off resting him, maybe do you put Grandal at first? Because they seem to want to play Reese McGuire a lot more than I expected them to play Reese McGuire. And what statement does it make to the rest of the team if it's clear you're beginning to manage the whatever resource Abreu is a little bit differently as he ages?
Well, we also know that Grandal's bigger strength is his bat anyways. He's been doing a decent job behind the plate, but Reese McGuire is just a better defensive catcher. As for the idea of platooning him over Abreu at first base, it's not a bad idea. You know, you have the flexibility of the DH as far as everything goes, and you can move him around from that spot to the other spot. The problem is, this is a team that's got like four DHs, and that is problematic. Defensively, this team is not as good as they should be. But it doesn't mean they couldn't win. Offensively, they should be trouncing everybody. But is it possible that he should be platooning a tad more? Maybe. That's not an unrealistic expectation, especially when you have a bat like Yasmani Grandal that can, one, hit for a lot of power from both sides of the plate and get on base.
Did you see the story about the prospect that was, I think, a third-round pick that was cut from the team? I forgot which team. For
Yankees.
A Yankees prospect, right? I don't have this wrong. A third-round pick who was actually stealing equipment, uniforms, and getting guys to sign stuff, and then actually taking stuff and selling it?
Yes. This is actually more common than you think, Dan.
What do you mean?
This is like... I've played with five guys that did this and got released from an organization and blackballed
five?
From baseball. This is a common thing. It's ridiculous. There are a lot of players that steal batting gloves. I had teammates who would steal batting gloves or bats, and then they would ship them back home. That we would have that all the time. It was just a common thing. You'd always have at least one kleptomaniac in every clubhouse. It's the weirdest thing. I've just never heard of a third rounder who got paid that significant amount of money to do it. Because if you're a third rounder, you're practically guaranteed to get to the big leagues. It's your job to lose. And it was his job to lose. He just stole everything. He was like, what's her name from Breaking Bad?
Now, is this a function of just minor leaguers being that desperate for money? Is it, part of the back of my head now starts thinking, is this gambling debts? Do guys get in? Need, and I don't want to get it to all dark. You're the one that mentioned Breaking Bad.
No.
But I don't want to get it to turn too dark. But did you ever, when you say there are five of them, did you ever know what the motivation was other than just walking around money?
Two of which were just poor guys who wanted more money. Another, which was a Dominican guy who was just sending things back home and just was doing that. Others, I've never heard of anybody trying to pay off any debts. Hell, this guy probably shouldn't have had any debts of any kind. He was a third rounder and was drafted, a year and a half earlier? So if he spent all that money, this guy was just clearly doomed from the start, and the Yankees need to do better due diligence when they're drafting their players.
What does it mean that Max Scherzer is out, what they're saying now, 6 to 8 weeks, and now we begin fulfilling? You talk about the Yankees being made of graham crackers. You know, the Mets pitching has been this way for how many generations now?
Oh, terrifying. Seeing Mad Max go down really, really hurt. They first said it was an oblique injury. Obliques are very, very tricky. I've pulled an oblique more than once. It's a very unpleasant injury. And here's the thing about that injury. It's easy to reactivate it like that. Mm-hmm. All it takes is one sneeze, and you're back on the IL for another 2 weeks. And I know that seems crazy, but it's just the case. Your oblique encompasses your entire body. But hearing the phrase 4 to 8 weeks, that's 2 months. An oblique is usually, 4 to 6 weeks at most. Hearing that it's 8 weeks, it could be a combination of his age. It could be the severity of it. It might be more of a tear than an actual pull. That time missed is significant because that time missed is going to cost the Mets about $20 million.
Did you see Daniel Vogelbach's triple the other night?
If you can call it that, yes.
What do you mean if you can call it that? Our guy Ian Happ tried to make a play. I think Ian misjudged where the wall was, because the Wrigley Field wall is weird, and I think he just jumped thinking he might hit the wall, and then he didn't. And I was sitting there. I was in the 17th row, and I got to see that is the biggest man I've ever seen triple. I think I was at a game where Pete Incaviglia did it. I don't know if you remember Inky. But Inky wasn't.
I remember him.
He wasn't Vogelbach big. Have you ever seen anybody larger than Vogelbach triple in a major league game or a minor league game?
No, absolutely not. In fact, listen, I love Daniel Vogelbach. I one time went to a bar with Daniel Vogelbach.
Really?
When we were triple.
Yeah.
I want to know
that story.
Oh well, we've been out drinking once or twice over the years. We played against each other a lot, especially in AAA. At the time, he was with the Mariners. I'll never forget it because Daniel Vogelbach. Because you see how big he is. You think he's big when you see him in person, but truthfully, he is a refrigerator of a human being. I've never seen a frame as rectangular and stocked as he was. Because I know you look at him in a uniform, you think, oh, he's a fat guy. He's also like really fat jacked too. He's a strong, strong man. I'll never forget it. We see him at this bar, and you can't miss him because he's three people. And we just see him over there, and my friend's like, is that Vogelbach? I said, yeah. He's like, that guy is a unit. I said, I know. Look at him. And just knowing that type of body frame trucking around those base paths, if I'm the third baseman, I'm getting out of the way. I'm not even going to try to make a tag.
Well, that's what happened when he finally came home on the sack fly, because Suzuki makes this unbelievable throw from right field. And I look, if you're Wilson Contreras, to hang in the way he did, to see that, because what, force times P equals MV, it's force, momentum, I don't know, whatever.
It would hurt.
F equals MA, P equals MV, if I remember freshman high school physics. And right, it looks like pain to me.
Yeah.
But he hung in there, and then he kind of swiped the tag into his face, and then Vogelbach got mad, and then the bullpen guys come sprinting in, which is hilarious to watch those doors at Wrigley open, and out of the ivy comes streaming these guys like a video game so they can stand there and harumph at each other. And even Contreras is like, dude, I'm sorry, I didn't really mean to do anything. Like you've been a catcher in that situation where you're just trying to put a tag on, and sometimes that your glove ends up somewhere. I thought he hit him in the balls, and then I saw it again, and it was his face. And it's like, what do you do as a catcher? I'd be like, sorry, man.
You just say sorry, and it's part of the game, man. Hard tags, hard plays at the plate, especially. And you mentioned this. This is actually something that I want you to take into account and think about Contreras's point of view in this.
Okay.
Because on a sack fly, you're not watching the runner at third. You have to kind of have your eye on him and have him in your peripheral, but you're watching the play in front of you full unfold. The throw is going to be coming in. So as a catcher, I'm set up in a position to see the ball and not necessarily see the runner. I know he's coming, and here's the funny thing. You could hear him coming. Vogelbach, believe me, you can hear those hooves bringing that gigantic refrigerator of a human being coming down the 90 feet. So trust me, he knew where he was at all times. And when he made the tag, hey, it just tried to get the tag off without Contreras getting absolutely demolished at home plate by what I can only assume is a big rig of a human being.
So we've heard the number of metaphors here. We've had stocked refrigerator. We've had unit. We've had big rig. I know that the rule in medicine in differential diagnosis is when you hear hoofbeats, think horses, not zebras. And doctors will refer to something like in an episode of House, when it's some this weird, impossible diagnosis, they'll refer to it as a zebra. In your case, if you're a catcher and you're waiting for the throw and he's there, when you hear hoofbeats, I think wildebeest, right?
Yeah.
Or whatever that is. Think elephant.
Be aware that a water buffalo is coming at you at full speed.
Yeah, no fun. The next Down the Line with Cody Decker is Sunday at noon on these very airwaves, and we will look forward to it. Have a healthy and productive weekend, young man.
Dan, I will. I love you. Thank you so much for having me, as always. And hey, happy anniversary. 27 years. You started when I was 8.
Oh, stop it.
I love you, Daniel.
Yeah, you too. That's Cody Decker. And next up, We have to get to the bad job of backtracking that has apparently been done here by Nick Saban. The straw man arguments are multiplying here because both guys are pretending to not understand what the other guy is talking about. We talked a little bit about it yesterday, but it's that's increasing. They're trying to add layers to a discussion that neither one really meant. But and we're not going to fall for this okie doke or the banana in the tailpipe. Whatever they're trying to do, we're gonna make sure that they know that we know that we understand what's really at stake here. That's next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Dan Bernstein.
Hey, Bernstein.
Middays on 670 The Score.
You can call me anything you want to call me. You ain't calling me a cheat. I don't cheat and I don't lie. So I learned that when I was a kid. If you did, the old man slapped you side of the head. Maybe somebody should have slapped him.
I think I'm watching too much Ted Lasso. I think now that since I've just binged all the Ted Lasso in the last couple of weeks, I hear a voice like that, and I just hear Coach Lasso talking right there. So my dad was, you know, slapping right upside the head, said something like that. Maybe someone should come slap him. Like, I'm starting to hear some of those things. It was so funny when the cop pulled me over outside of Columbus. I'm sitting there and I say, oh, God, he got me. I feel bad. We're waiting for him to come over. And this is, you know, and Beth is giving her speech to Zoe about, you know, the whole thing about, you know, think about how a person of color would feel and seeing those lights and how privileged you are to not have that same feeling. I'm like, okay, whatever. And I said, thanks. And Zoe says, Mom, I know. I'm a sophomore in college. Trust me. We talk about this. And then she says, well, if the cop comes over, goes, what would Ted Lasso do? So I said, oh, well, officer, I'm so sorry. That speed just kind of got away from me there. You know, so I would think, you know, even though I might not have as much hair as I used to have, I should think more hair than tortoise, you know, slow and steady. As my dad always said, slow and steady wins the race, more hair than tortoise. It's like when you start watching those shows, you just start to hear the characters, the voices in your head. Hey, before we get into this college football stuff real quick, I want to let you know, if you are interested in actually watching the unveiling of the Fergie Jenkins statue today, you can watch it live on Marquee Network in an hour, 11:30 a.m. It's Cubs Live Fergie Day Special. The Cubs are going to unveil the statue of legendary Hall of Fame pitcher Fergie Jenkins on a special Fergie Day edition of Cubs Live. So you can be a part of history before you want to walk over and see the statue. If you can't make it down there, you can actually see it happen. I love the piece the Tribune did about having his former teammates reminisce about Fergie. What a special guy. What a really sweet man he is. And I know he's always been really nice to any show that I've done with his availability on multiple in-studio interviews and in-person interviews. My favorite anecdote in this Trib piece was told by Billy Williams when he referred to Fergie as a strong individual. Check out this story. There's so many times we'd go out a little bit, come in a little late, and he'd be on the mound the next day. I remember we were in Pittsburgh, and we had a good time that night. He and I went out. And then we had to go fishing at 4 o'clock in the morning, 40 miles away in Latrobe. Although he says had to go. You didn't have to go fishing. You wanted to go fishing 40 miles away.
Anywho.
At 4 o'clock in the morning. So we rushed back to the hotel. We stayed up there fishing. We rushed back. The bus left at 5:15 p.m. So we run in, take a shower, get to the bus. I said, Fergie, who's pitching tonight? He said, I am. Like, okay. All right. Yesterday, Nick Saban went on ESPNU Sirius XM radio to try to walk back the stuff that he said about Texas A&M buying all their players and Jackson State, and how basically in front of some boosters, he said, well, I don't have the money. You guys have to give me a whole bunch of money because we other teams are all buying all their players. Because, you know, Jimbo Fisher went off. Now, first, and I mentioned this, Jimbo Fisher seemed to take umbrage at the implication of illegality. And that's what he hid behind. And he hid behind the play of 17-year-old kids and their families and 17-year-old kids and their families and 17-year-old kids and their families. You're saying they did anything illegal. He really didn't. It has nothing to do with it. He never implied anything illegal. So Saban says, I apologize for that part of it. I wasn't saying that anyone did anything illegal in using name, image, and likeness. I didn't say that. That was something that was assumed by what I said, which is not really what I meant, nor was it what I said. There's nothing illegal about doing this. It's the system that allows you to do it, and that's the issue that I have. Okay, but now you're buying into this obfuscation. Nobody was hung up on the legality or illegality. I don't know anybody involved that had any issue with or shared any presumption that there was something about illegality, which is why I found it weird that Fisher got mad about it. But here's where Saban loses me. And this is, again, when he talks, when the narcissist demigod, or actual god, he didn't call him a demigod, when he talks. Tell me what's missing here. And this is sort of the who wants to tell him. Saban said, people want to understand why people are transferring schools and getting money to do it. I think it's great that players can earn money, but do you make a decision about where you can make the most money? That's the issue. And I'm not sure that's good for college athletics. Here is the rhetorical question asked by Nick Saban. The statement is, I think it's great that players can earn money. But do you make a decision about where you can make the most money? Hey, coach. Yes! Yes, 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 1,000 times yes! Just like you. You know where I learned to do that? You are right, you. Dad, I learned it from watching you. That's a deep cut if you know that one, if you know that reference. Nick Saban's contract automatically escalates that he always has the most. College football coaches that go everywhere and get everything and have eunuchs feeding them grapes into their mouths as they lie back on their thrones and are fanned with palm fronds, and the muses play the lyre as they flit about. Come on, man! Really? Come on! But do you, I think it's great that players can earn money, but do you make a decision about where you can make the most money? Yeah. Yes. Yes, you do. And that's what they're doing. And then now, like, yeah. And what's wrong with that? Why is that bad? What do you find so threatening about that? That's it right there. Last graph of this CBSSports.com piece here. All this other stuff. Well, he said I'm doing something illegal. I ain't doing nothing illegal. How dare you say I'm doing stuff illegal? Well, I never meant to say you were doing anything illegal. Just, that's not what you're talking about. That's not what anybody's talking about. You're all terrified. Yes. He finally got to it. He finally got to it there at the very, very end of it, buried deep in this. You got to what they don't get and what they don't like. And why Dabo Sweeney said he would have to quit. Well, I won't pay players. I'm going to quit. Well, go quit, your dumb goober ass then. You make a decision about where you can make the most money? Yes.
And it's not like, and this is no shade to Lawrence's alma mater here of Alabama.
Oh, go ahead.
It's not like he's saying this as the coach of Stanford or Northwestern, where it's like that's always kind of the angle, so you play towards that, in which case it's like, okay, you're doing that for your school. I got you. You're Alabama, man.
Right, I know. Your quarterback made $1 million last year.
Right.
You don't think I think it kind of helped you get your quarterback.
You're crying poor at having a quarterback that could be the number one pick of the draft next year. Like, right. What are you doing?
Right. Do you know you're Nick Saban? Like
did
really?
You not get the memo?
Did you not get the memo? That kid is from Chicago. I mean, come on.
And he's not going to Bama unless right, you pay him more.
Right, exactly. Well, how does he get to Memphis? I mean, right? I mean, come on. Really? I loved that part of it. He asked that. Did anybody who heard that, did anybody like look at each other? Any side glance on that? Did he just say, like, the answer is like, yes. Yes, you go to the place that gives you the most money. And I would love to have heard what his response would be.
But everybody,
well, that's not college athletics.
Everybody around him, it's like Animal House. It's like, don't stop him now. He's on a roll.
He's on a roll. But it's because you know what the response would be. The response would be, well, that's just not the model for college athletics. And the answer is, why not? Why shouldn't it be? Why is it inherently bad? If college students in other jobs and other walks of life can have professional opportunities that don't conflict with them being college students and they can figure it out, I just don't, I don't know. I don't know. This is a, the going out of their way to not understand something that seems pretty simple to understand is getting really, really obvious with every argument, every time. And that's what this did. It elevated, and especially in their attempted walk back and trying to introduce other aspects of it, of, well, it didn't violate any Texas law. No one accused you of violating some Texas law. Texas doesn't even have any laws unless it means that women can't control their own uteruses. Those are the only laws, I think. That and their power grid isn't supposed to work. But other than you know, mandatory ownership of 10 guns per person and women not being in charge of their own bodies, Texas really doesn't have any laws that are going to bother you at all. So don't hide behind Texas law or anything like that. I just know we're not done with this being really, really, really fun. The same goes for the midday midway. And when bungee jumping, there's something that I thought was mandatory in the preparation for the bungee jump that apparently is optional. And then changes something. It when is a bungee jump not a bungee jump? I'll ask that question. And we've got a bison on the loose in Lake County still, and they're trying to track it down. So it's been on the loose for a while, and they think by the end of the month they're going to be able to capture the bison. And it might be Dan Vogelbach. We don't know. That's coming up next on The Score.
First half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, midway,
the midday midway.
1-2
midway, the most important of the year.
3-4
the most exciting thing on the midway.
5-6-7-8
our objective is midway.
9-10
you guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real you can almost feel it.
The midday midway with Dan Bernstein on 670 The Score.
Time for your Friday midday midway, and we talked White Sox and Yankees. We talked about managerial process and discussed what Bruce Levine mentioned earlier on. I mentioned as I was driving in, I was just kind of alarmed with Bruce sort of telling us that the Sox are not going to be, don't expect them to be an offensive juggernaut, is what he said. And I think, well, they better get a whole hell of a lot closer to one than they are right now, because the spread between their offensive performance last year and their offensive performance this year is distressing, to say the least. Last year, they were fourth in offensive runs above average, fourth best in WRC+, fourth in walk percentage, and this year, they're 24th in WRC+. They're last in walk percentage. They're 20th in runs above average, and it absolutely has to get better. Cody Decker weighed in on baseball stuff. And we also discussed the attempted backtrack by Nick Saban after Jimbo Fisher came out and slammed him, and the fact that Lane Kiffin was supposed to be on the Dan Patrick Show today, but Greg Sankey, the head of the SEC, came in and said, everybody shut up, nobody say anything, everybody be quiet, no talking, no media. Well, okay then, I guess. So there's these wonderful pictures here from themirror.com of a man in Argentina at the Cabra Corral Dam, a 36-year-old tourist from Buenos Aires, on a platform over the water, getting all set to take his bungee jump from this high platform
about 131 feet. And the problem, first of all, very, very good idea to bungee jump over water. The problem is they didn't connect the other end of the cord. So you did the bungee jump, and he did the whole falling down part. But the whole bungee part is the bouncing back up. Is the cord stretches and stretches and stretches, and then boing.
Unless you're Trevor proposing to Hillary.
Then what happens? What's that?
Hillary Banks!
Yes, Trevor!
Will you marry me?
I ain't no bungee expert or nothing, but I don't think he's supposed to be slamming into the ground like that.
Well, they didn't think he was supposed to be smashing into the water like that. And even though you don't die, water hurts. If you fall from 131 feet, I mean, you know how it was as a kid. I think they took a lot of the high dives out of public pools just for insurance reasons. I know country clubs and public pools have gotten rid of what used to be the high dive is now like the regular dive. And then they have like low dives because I think enough kids are saying, ow, my neck and ow, my head. So he appeared to be uninjured, but they did take him to a local hospital. He was treated for what they called polytrauma, hypothermia, and muscle pain. Probably treated for impending lawsuit is for what he was treated, regardless of the waivers that he signed. And if you've seen those waivers, like the tourist waivers in some of these other countries, believe me, I've signed them, and I don't think they would withstand the rigor of a legal challenge, because most of them are absolutely if I was in one country where we actually brought the disclaimer that you had to sign back, and it's incomprehensible. It is, as it's written, completely incomprehensible, let alone legally airtight. But into the water he went, and he seems to be fine enough. But the whole idea of the bungee jump, attach the other end of it, please. This close to home. You remember a year ago, we talked about the bison on the loose in Lake County? We did the story. It was called The Sheriff's Office Refers to the 1,300-pound animal as Tyson the Bison. Members of the public have called it Billy the Bison. And then I forgot about it. To be honest with you, I completely slipped my mind. But they're on it. They're on the case. Forest Preserve officials in Illinois say they aim to have a bison on the loose since September, captured safely by the end of May. You have less than 2 weeks. Lake County Forest Preserve officials say that Tyson the Bison, since escaping from a trailer, is going to be removed by Memorial Day weekend. They say that's the goal, when preserve attendance traditionally increases. This is from the Director of Public Safety at Lake County Forest Preserve, John Tannehill. I think it's better if Tanny actually chases down the bison himself. This is John Tannehill, spelled T-A-N-N-A, so I don't think it's a relative.
Imposter Tannehill.
The wrong Tannehill. It says the safety of our users and the animals are number one priority. Bison is considered domestic livestock. Therefore, a forest preserve is not an appropriate home. The bison's owner, a Wakanda farmer, Wakanda forever, has been working with Forest Preserve Ranger Police to attempt to lure the animal into a barn for safe capture and return to the farm. Tannehill said the owner could face fines if the bison is not captured by the end of the month. Wait a second. How does your fine schedule work here? September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April. It's been on the loose for 8 months. And now they're saying, well, I know it's been 8 months. Eight!
They've named the bison Dr. Richard Kimball.
Right? So I want a hard target search. But like, now you're, I don't know. We give you eight. There's an eight-month grace period on escaped bison, apparently. Or it's outsmarting everybody. Is it that hard? Can't they tranquilize it?
Take a lot of tranquilizer.
I don't know. Can't they tranquilize it until it falls asleep? And then you get a winch, get one of those 6-ton, 12,000-pound winches, and you drag that thing onto a flatbed, and you take it back to the hotel. I don't know what you do. I bet you do something
same
with it, right? come on. It's like, well, I know it's been 8 months, but soon we're going to start finding you for it. And they can do bad things to you because it's like getting hit by a pickup truck. I mean, they're...
Or Dan Vogelbach.
Or Danny Vogelbach. Maybe he can speak bison. Do we know? Maybe he knows he can walk out there and sort of, you know, bellow and huff in a way that only a bison can. And he can speak to it and say, please, please, please.
Isn't that a midday show that was like 17th in the mid-market? Bellow and huff?
Yep. Just say something to it. Get it to go somewhere. And I don't know, what are they... What kind of food would be enticing for a bison? I don't know. What do they like? Do they want, what do they eat? Grass, oats?
My guess would be yes.
I don't know. I don't. I would imagine they eat grass, right? I think they're a cow. I think they have the multi-partitioned stomachs like everything else. I think
according to Google, bison primarily eat grasses, weeds, and leafy plants.
Okay. Well, I think we'd find some of those, or maybe it's finding enough of them and it just doesn't want to bother. It sounds like it's not bothering anybody, and then they can't have it running around forest preserves though, because I fish up there. Remember, like near Lake Zurich, a lot of those forest preserves. I don't want to run into this damn thing.
It'd be like Mean Girls, where there's just like a close video on you, and then all of a sudden it's like the bus that goes by, and it just says the bison just
yes. The well, I will tell you this: what is the name of the place? The old quarry in Crystal Lake, wonderful little fishing area. And there's bass and there's northern pike, and it's open during the day. It's a great fishery. I forgot the name of it, but there is a repurposed quarry outside of Crystal Lake where I went fishing, and I was just kind of minding my own business. And there were a couple, you know, little northern pike out there, and I'm just gonna throw on a crankbait, and there was a buck, a big. I thought it was an elk. I mean, this thing was enormous, like thrashing through the woods there, and very, very close, too close, actually. And you don't see that often. A multi-point, like a hunter would have passed out had he or she seen this animal. And it was not real bothered by me, because usually when I do take my nature walks, like up in the Labaa Woods, I love walking up the North Fork of the River in Labaa Woods up there near off of Cicero. And there's deer everywhere, and they're so inured to human contact that they don't even look at you twice. But I've never seen, you know, one of the like a big antlered male there, because you never know, they're in a bad mood and they can do bad things to you. So I backed up very, very slowly. So and one of these fishing weekends when the kids aren't busy, I might run into it. I'll do what I can. I'll see if I can do my part in helping, and pick a name, by the way. It can't be Tyson the Bison and Billy the Bison. Now you're just going to confuse it. It's going to have an identity crisis.
Right. That's why we settle on Dr. Richard Kimball.
On Dr. Richard Kimball, the Bison. Bears talk coming up next. Smart people with smart observations about Justin Fields and more.
Also, a new report on a current Bear that would like to be out of Chicago.
Is it the one that... It is. It's the one that I want out of Chicago. And does it explain a certain absence from OTAs, perhaps?
Maybe we can find out next segment.
That's what you call a tease.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.